History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
I promise you this in just a moment. Before I jump to that, though, I want to get James Cone and the others who've not spoken involved in this conversation. James Cone, you're one of the brilliant minds in this country, certainly on the issue of theology and faith and the Black church. Let me just ask you whether or not you believe that fundamentally the Black church has in fact become too political. Is the Black church too political? Has the church gotten away from its primary mission?
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here just like everybody else. And I'm also pleased that you asked me a question about whether the Black church is too political. Of course, it all depends on what you mean by politics and in what way you mean that. I think one of the things that the Black church needs to ask itself is what is its mission? What is its mission? I think one of the things that the Black church has lost is a good understanding of its mission. Black church is good at preaching, good at singing, good at a lot of things, but the Black church has not been as good as thinking about what its nature is and thinking about what its mission is. Is its mission primarily saving souls? Or is it saving bodies? Or is it both together? I think if you see them both together, I think you would have to see that the Black church have to be political because politics is a part of life. It also has to be concerned about saving souls because full meaning in life is not simply found in politics. So I would want to emphasize this particular point here is that if the Black church has one problem that I think it needs to think about, it is the problem of whether it is called to save its own life or whether it's called to lose its life for the sake of others. I feel that the Black church is concerned with saving its own life because it's so interested in the gospel of success. The gospel of Jesus is not a gospel of success. The gospel of Jesus is a gospel of ultimate success through failure. It's a gospel of ultimate success through obvious failure. That's why the cross is at the center of the gospel. The cross is not a gospel of success. Jesus did not succeed. He failed. But God took that failure and transform that failure into success. Now, it's very important when you talk about ultimate success, it's not so obvious, because the resurrection was not obvious. The tomb was empty, but yet nothing was there. I feel today with so much focus on building buildings and all the other humongous things that we do, that we fail to see that the cross is at the heart of what the black church ought to be about. It was not very difficult for the black church to see that during the time in which it was born. Because being a slave church, that was not success. That it was obvious failure there. Now, the problem is that the church has lost its legacy. It has lost its message. And when success becomes the focus of it, it loses its mission and it loses its message. I would like to see the church not be so concerned about its success, but much more concerned about a kind of success through failure, and where its failure is at the heart of things. So I would want to put my emphasis there. I'm concerned that the church doesn't get too concerned about its own survival. Because Jesus said, people who seek to save their life shall lose it. But if you lose your life for the sake of the least of these, then you'll find your life.
All right. Y'all don't want none of this.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank. Y'all ain't ready with this. Host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Brothers and sisters, you are listening to the Black Reality Think Tank, and my name is William Rogers, and I am your host. We are here every Tuesday evening, 8 to 10, and so happy that you are able to join us here this evening. Tonight, we're going to continue our conversation on the most powerful institution in the black community, the black church. And so tonight we want to raise some questions, and we have a wonderful guest that's going to join us from the clergy later on this afternoon. We're going to be also joined by our co-host, Sister Bonisiwa Ayan. She'll be joining us very shortly. But we're going to talk about, we're going to raise the question, in 2019, is the mission of the black church to resurrect the black community or either resurrect itself? What is this mission? And that is the question that Dr. Cone just raised in the clip that we played, and we want to have a very good and thorough understanding about that. And I want to bring on this guest, on our guest, and who will be giving us some of their feedback from their positions in the community. But anyway, we thank you again, as I said, for joining us. We are here. We are part of the network called TimeForAnAwakening.com, which is also a part of the Black Talk Radio Network.com. The Black Reality Think Tank is sponsored by Motherland Media, and it is produced by the Sankofa Historical Society. We are really greatly excited about this tonight, and we are going to, as I said, have a wonderful conversation with a lot of our guests about this. One of the reasons that we really want to talk about this, and really why it's so, so important, is that, as I said earlier, it is and was historically been the strongest institution in the black community. It has been the whole basis of survival. It has addressed issues on all levels, particularly food, clothing, and shelter. Coming out of the dark nights of chattel slavery, it was the black church that provided refuge. As some have often said, it was the balm in Gilead, and it was there to soothe our conditions and so forth. And even during the system of slavery, the black church was there. And so we know it's an important, and as many of the issues that we faced during those years of enslavement, a lot of those are still with us today. And so the question then obviously is, can the church address those? Does it address those? What is its role? What is it doing? How beneficial is it to our community? And maybe we can raise some points that will suggest to some the things that they can do to improve on the work of the black church. So that's why we are doing it, and we want to make sure that our community stays strong. It is strong. We want to make sure it continues to grow. And these are the kinds of things that are a major factor. They play a pivotal position in development. And so we want to focus in on those here at the Black Reality Think Tank, talk about them from a think tank perspective, give hopefully some solutions on how to make a lot of these things happen. Motherland Media, which is, as I said, the sponsor of this, as well as the Timeport Awakening network system, has other programs that are a part of this of their work. And those programs are also innovative and invigorating for us. And I just want to kind of mention a few of them that are a part. One is the program they call African Perspective. That's hosted by Brother Oshiema Adelabu every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And again, that is African Perspectives. And that's the produced by Motherland Media. Oshiema Adelabu is the host of that. And then, as you know, on Monday and Wednesday from 1 to 3 p.m., we have the Black People Matrix with host Franklin Jones. The Black People Matrix, host Franklin Jones, Monday, Wednesday from 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And then on Monday evening from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds. Monday evening, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And then Monday evenings from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., Let's Buy Black 365. And then, as you know, Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank, 8 to 10. Wednesday, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., Revive, the program called Revive, and the host of that is POC, which is Proof of Consciousness. That's every Wednesday from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Revive by host POC. And then on Thursday from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., Relationships with Joy and Troy. Relationships with Joy and Troy. Every Thursday evening from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And then on Friday, from 8 to 10, we have Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot, and Brother Richard. They are on a very dynamic program. They are coming on as well. So we welcome you to listen to that. And then again on Sunday, they are there from 7 to 10. That's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then on Saturday, you have Sports Talk. Which is a very dynamic program as well. It's called Saturday Sports Talk. And that's Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Saturday Sports Talk, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. And those are the programs, some of the programs that are on the Time for an Awakening Network. And we welcome you to go to the website, www.timeforanawakening.com. All of our programs are there in the archived position. You can listen to them at any time, 24/7. And anything that you might have missed, go to the archive and listen to it as well. So that is the lineup here, here at Time for an Awakening. And we definitely, as I said, encourage you to continue to listen. We thank you for your patroness, and it's very important. Each night, we try to do an ancestral profile. We like to do that. I'm going to do something just a little bit different. It's still an ancestral profile, but preferably it is an institution. And that institution, obviously, is the Black Church. This was an article that appeared in a magazine in Wisconsin called 50 Plus. It's a women's magazine, but it was an article that was done on the history of the Black Church. And I'm going to read very briefly. It's a very brief summary and analysis, but it does hit at the points of what we're going to be doing and talking about tonight and why we are doing that. In the history of the Black Church in America is a very potent study that augments the trials and the tribulations of African people in America. This is a 386-year history, beginning in 1619. Previous studies of the Black Church have been done by such great minds as Carter B. Woodson, C. Eric Lincoln, E. Franklin Frazier, Dr. Benjamin Elijah Mays, and others. Most of the general studies done on the history of the Black Church were divided in two parts. They were the history of the Black Church during the antebellum period and the history of the Black Church post-antebellum. The Black Church during slavery and the Black Church after slavery are very dynamic histories. When one speaks of the Black Church, it embodies a religious practice of African people living in America, regardless of the denomination. A recent study on the history of the Black Church in America was done by Henry Hampton, and it was presented on a PBS special called We Have Come This Far by Faith. This study is extremely detailed and provides excellent insight on the history of the Black Church. In this study, anyone studying the history of the Black Church in America must begin with West African history before 1619. Captured African people were brought to America in 1619 would come with a very high level of spirituality. They would come mostly from West African culture. They were very spiritual with a strong sense of the omnipotence of a divine creator. They believed in one God and possessed a strong respect for nature, life, and their ancestors. They practiced traditional religions such as Yoruba, Igbo, and Akan. Some were even Muslims, but according to historical sources, none were Christian. John M. Biddy, in his book, African Religion and Philosophy, offers a very detailed study of the traditional West African religions. The captured Africans arriving in the New World did not abandon their traditional faith and belief in the divine. They continued to pray and worship their African understanding of the Creator and blend it with Christian principles. They met secretly in nature, outside of the sight of their living quarters, and outside of their captors. This practice was called the Invisible Institution. This was the church of Nat Turner, Denmark Brisset, Harriet Tubman, and other Africans who saw Christianity as a source of liberation and freedom. The church the Africans created for themselves consisted of praise songs, the use of traditional African instruments created from nature, libation messages, meditation, praise dancing, and prayer. The formal Christianization of African people would begin after 1619. There was a European settler by the name of Jonathan Winthrop who recorded the first formal baptism of an African in 1641. In 1660, King Charles of England urged the colonies to Christianize all of their captives. Most colonies agreed, but wrote in their colonial constitutions that Christianizing the encaptured people would not mean freedom. By 1680, all of the colonies would follow the practice. This would begin the formal process of Christianizing Africans. The plantation owners would force the captives to attend services conducted by himself or a traveling preacher. The dominant theology of the plantation church created for Africans focused on encouraging docility and humility and obedience to the master. Some plantations used what was called a slaveholder's Bible, which omitted most of the Old Testament and focused more on the epistles of Paul. The secret church of the Africans practiced a theology using the Old Testament themes of liberation. The independent black preachers began to emerge around 1750. Richard Allen and Absalom Jones are the first black men granted licenses to preach. The first recorded black congregation is established in 1758 on a plantation in Mecklenburg, Virginia. It is a Baptist congregation. The first separate black church is found in 1773 in Silver Bluffs, South Carolina. And then Mother Bethel AME Church, founded in 1794 by Richard Allen in Philadelphia, will house the largest congregations of Africans during this time period, the black church. This was an article that appeared in the 50 Plus magazine, and it was written by yours truly. So thank you very much for that. This is a lead-in to our discussion tonight. And we want to begin to raise the question. We have my co-host on the line. I want to bring her on and introduce her. Her name is Ms. Peniswa Ayan, and she is going to be helping me to mitigate this discussion. So good afternoon, Ms. Ayan. How are you doing? Ms. Ayan?
Good afternoon, Dr. Rogers. I'm going to have to call back in about 5 minutes, okay?
Okay, no problem. All right. Okay, we also had planned to, we have a minister that's going to join us, and he is going to be coming aboard in just a few minutes. He won't be on until just a little bit later. But let me get started in this question right now, because there are a few things that we want to consider. A lot of the liberation activities of African people in America, number one, to end the enslavement, to sort of diminish these horrific separation rules and laws and black codes and different things that they had to give better opportunities for African people in terms of food, clothing, and shelter, to educate our children and educate them in a way independent from that of the slave owners and the white institutions, were all under the umbrella and the work of the black church. And in those early years of antebellum, as well as the post-antebellum, the black church was attempting to do that. The leaders that we see a lot of the black nationalists, leaders, people like Martin Delaney, and some of those very powerful brothers of that ilk, were very clearly the type that wanted to make a difference, and they were actually ministers. A lot of them were trained in ministry, and a lot of them were, and so they were part of the system of fighting using the church. A lot of the educational institutions that would begin to emerge would emerge from black churches. And so it's in a very critical institution that must be considered. If it's not doing what it needs to do, then I think our community needs to step forward and make suggestions, contribute. A lot of times, you know, we want to try to make changes. And I think one of the things we have to consider is, can you make these changes from the outside? Or do you have to sometimes get in the inside to see how they're done? And then obviously on how to change them. Our communities are very fragile now. They're open. Our children are being really threatened by many activities. They're being kidnapped. They're being killed by policemen. They're being shot. And so we have to find a method that we can address that. And by no means am I saying that the church can do that. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm just saying is that there needs to be some force that can bring people together and obviously make it possible for them to fight some of these things that obviously are threatening us and putting us in jeopardy. I think as you look and as we look around us, we don't have any institutions that are independent and sovereign in that way where they can really address our areas. And so the church has obviously been that way, but I think the enemies now have learned how to use the church to exploit its power and what it had been. Last week we talked about the racism and religion and what that means as a theological perspective. And very clearly we saw that religion was used and has been used by sometimes our enemies to hurt us, to stop us, to attempt to capture us, and some of the very horrendous things that have been done in the name of religion is just not acceptable. You know, the whole incident that we know about in South Carolina and other areas where they were bombing churches, the 16th Street Baptist Church, Birmingham, Alabama, other places of that nature, they have used religion in a way to do that. So, and that whole thing of instituting fear in our community and then taking those strongest institutions to use it to institute that fear, we have to be aware of that and not let that happen and not let ourselves be fearful of that and not let us turn against each other and turn against each other in a way that becomes destructive for some of those institutions. If people are not doing what they should do, then you tell them. You criticize them. You tell them. You say that you need to, I disagree with what you're doing. I disagree with what you're saying, that we need to tell them. But we have a tendency to turn our backs on people that, our own people I'm talking about, when they do things that are not done in the way you think they should be done. So instead of having a discussion. So tonight, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to lay on the table some facts. I do not want this to be an argument over religion and theology. It's really simply looking at an institution that has been so very, very critical. One of the questions that has often been raised is the whole idea of what is the theology of the black church? What has it been historically, and what is it now? Well, very clearly, historically, the theology has centered around the condition in which African people were living. And during the period of enslavement, obviously, that focus was to get ourselves out of slavery, to find a way to move. So when Nat Turner did his revolt, he used the Old Testament. He used the story of Moses and getting the going into Egypt, which represented the evil, and to free the children out of bondage. And so that was preached quite often in terms of the antebellum church. And as I said in that description, it was called the invisible institution. It was because that it was a church, but it met down usually out in the back where no one could see or get to it. And then later, eventually, the slave owners knew that and decided to try to find a way to stop that. And then what they did is they allowed the Africans, the enslaved Africans, to have church in a building, and they would provide a building. Well, in doing that, that way they would have a chance to listen to them and to be able to hear what was going on and monitor what was going on, and so that way a Nat Turner situation would not ever rise again. But that was done, and so as you see, right after the Nat Turner revolt, the organized churches were allowed, began to be allowed, the 1860s, late 1850s, 1870s, they began to allow the brick-and-mortar church to take place. But the Revolutionary Black Church, the first black church, met in the backwoods of Mississippi, Alabama, Texas, North Carolina, South Carolina, down usually by the creek. They always chose water as an area to do that. Dr. James Cone, who has done a mighty work in terms of black liberation theology, he is a ancestor now. He's the one that we had in the quote, talks a little bit about that theology of that early black church that was very revolutionary. And then there was another book written by a historian. His name was Albert Raveteau. Albert Raveteau wrote a book called The Slave Religion. And he talked about specifically the philosophy and the teaching and some of the ideology of that antebellum black church called the Invisible Institution and how it operated and what was it all about. A good example, I don't know how many of you saw the movie that was done about the young girl, and it's slipping my mind right this minute, but it was done by Oprah Winfrey. She played, she is the producer of it. The book was written by Toni Morrison and Beloved. I'm sorry, the movie Beloved. It was actually a movie. And I mentioned the movie because the book is actually better, but Beloved is an example of the invisible black church and how it operated. If you remember, the woman was the minister, and they used to go out in the backwoods, and this was even antebellum period because the movie Beloved took place years right after slavery, about 1867, 1868, but still they were under threat from the captors. And so they would meet out in the woods, and they would, and one of the things that she wanted them to do was to heal. A lot of the theology of those early years was about healing. Healing the spiritual wounds, healing the sores and the scars, and to start a life anew. And so if for those of you who did see it, if you remember, one of the things she was saying in her message, she said, I want you to dance. I want you to laugh. Let your children laugh. Let your children dance. I want you to move around. And then they all started getting together and dancing. Well, that was done to as a way of getting the mind to be jovial, getting the mind to get it off of those years of that cruel bondage system that Africans were exposed to for 200 some years. And so, as she indicated last, so a lot of the antebellum black church was to ease the misery. So singing the songs about that this won't happen anymore. We're going to be free of this. You know, Lord, please help us. Get us out of this. That was a source of healing those wounds. That was a source of being able to no longer suffer the pain and the trials. And so that theology was designed to do that. They used the Old Testament, and obviously they used the New Testament. And in the New Testament, the story of Jesus, one who was persecuted, like the Africans were, one who was made to suffer and belittle by his captors, but there came a day when he was resurrected, out of all of that. And so that theology and that way was used in a method to talk about how to do that now, how you can do that. Howard Thurman, Dr. Howard Thurman, wrote a book called Jesus and the Disinherited. And he talked about the resurrection of life, and not only, even though the tomb story is symbolic of the resurrection idea, but the resurrection is to raise up, come out of the poverty and suffering and pain that you're doing. A lot of it, which is needed today, is still there. It still needs to be a part of the theology of anything. And then also the songs, as I said earlier, did a lot to bring and help in the soothing. So the black church was the balm in Gilead to heal the sin sick soul. And it was there. And so I ask myself a lot of times, when I know a lot of us critique very heavily the black church, we critique the idea of Christianity as being a killer to black people, and that is the worst thing that could have happened to us. And there are some arguments that there are problems in it as a philosophy. There are problems in it because it was used and manipulated as a political system, and it wasn't necessarily about spirituality. But I think what you found among the Africans on the plantations is that they were incorporating the religion of traditional Africa into this ideology. Maybe the names changed and things, but I think a lot of the practices were done the same. And one of the individuals who, and a real in-depth study has not been done of him, but one of the individuals who practiced that real down-hearted, deep African spirituality embedded into Christianity was Bishop Mason. Bishop C.H. Mason, who was the founder of the Church of God in Christ. Very spiritual man, who understood the African tradition of religion and worship. Who understood accessing the spiritual world, you know, through means of prayer and through means of chant and songs and the different tools that he used to do that. That was a real good example of that. And then again, as I said, Dr. Albert Rabiteau, in his book Slave Religion, he does talk about some of that. He does talk a little bit about how all of that is done and was used. So I want to throw that out there as a foundation, and then I want to bring on my co-host. I think she may be ready now to come on and to just help me, as I said, navigate through this. And then we're going to bring on a brother from the clergy who's going to talk a little bit about goals and missions of the modern church, and looking at it from a perspective. Sister Ayan, are you here?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon to you. How are you?
Good evening. I'm okay. How are you doing?
Doing great. Well,
good. And greetings to all that are listening. I got to say, as usual, your introduction, the information that you shared was just very, very enlightening and powerful.
Thank you.
Yes.
So I wanted to get into the conversation. Let me ask you, and I know you're going to help me when we begin to talk to our guests, but how do you see the role of the black church in America in terms of empowering the community? Do you see that as something possible, or is it just talk?
I believe that anything is possible.
Okay.
But doesn't mean that it's doable or easy. For me, you know, everything just really does go back to recapturing the African mind, mm-hmm. and healing from menticide.
Right.
Because no matter what religion, where we are, as long as our minds have been colonized, you know, mm-hmm. by a horrific oppressor and damage, et cetera, we won't be able to do the things that we need to do. So, I would really start there with, you know, the process of healing our minds.
Right.
So that we can do the things that were done in the past.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's true. And that's really what, when you really do an in-depth look at the beginning, as I said, as you look at the theology, it was about healing. That was very important. I thought, like I said, I thought Toni Morrison did a very good job of that in Beloved. Did you see Beloved?
I saw it, but I didn't understand it, so I'm glad that you broke it down. Okay. I was learning as you were talking.
You remember that church scene? They were meeting out in the woods, and the woman, the mother who had been the strength of that little community, was standing in the middle on top of a tree stump, and people were gathered around her, and she said, "Men, I want you to dance, let your women see you dance." And he said, "Children, let your children laugh." You remember that?
Vaguely. I was trying to recall it while you were talking about it.
Okay. Well, that as I said, that was the means of the theology of let's be happy. Let's bring back joy. Everybody was sad. Everybody was, you remember, and again, Toni Morrison was doing a job talking about the healing and the fear that had been instilled. You know, it was a big focus in that, you know, in her book, as well as in the movie of, for instance, looking at the sores and the cuts on your body from the whip and from the chains around you. And they would sit and they would rub those sores, because in there was memory, the memory of that, you know, and the suffering that the Africans went through under that system. And as we've always said, you know, you and I have talked about it, you know, particularly as we talked about the menticide part and others, we really have not discussed in depth all of the pain and damages that the system of chattel slavery did on our people. I mean, we know that, you know, that it was a cruel system. We know that. We know the whippings and the beating. But there's other stuff that goes into that piece, particularly in the way it created fear.
Uh-huh.
And see, fear, and we talked about it on that last program, fear prevents you from doing anything. Because if you're fearful, you're very likely not to fight.
And
you're not going to fight because you're scared.
Yeah, and then if you're, you know, introduced to a fear-based type of Christianity,
right,
then you really got people on lockdown.
Right. Uh-huh. How do you see Christianity? Christianity, you know, in terms of looking at it from its historical development, the idea of Christianity is what in the biblical text is the New Testament, basically. Because prior to the New Testament, there was no Christianity. There was no Old Testament. There's no such thing as that. Christianity begins with Paul, basically, in terms of the teaching. And the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the books that supposedly describe Jesus. There are studies that are done in seminaries called Synoptic Gospel, where they go in and they try to compare and contrast those Gospels to get an understanding of Jesus and who he was and what his ministry was, if whatever, you know, the case may have been. But again, many people say that that was used as a tool of imprisonment of our minds continuously. And not only just Africans, Europeans too. They use it to subdue and to rule over their kingdoms in a certain way. Do you agree with that? I mean, I don't know how much of the history you've read, but do you agree with that in terms of a study format?
Of a what?
As a study system, studying Christianity. Is that a good analysis of Christianity, you think?
Well, you know, I have read somewhere that, and I don't know if this answers your question, but that when Europeans invade, historically when they invaded anywhere, whether it was Africa or India, wherever, that they had a system. First to label the people, the indigenous people, as savages and say that they were coming to civilize the savages. How were they going to do that? They were going to Christianize them and Europeanize them.
Okay.
That is a problem right there.
Okay. So yes. In other words, the idea is conquering people and turning them into a particular religion and forcing them to accept that religion, correct? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and the way that you teach them about that religion.
Right, okay.
Because the way Nat Turner learned about, you know, the biblical texts is different from, you know, the frightened to death person that was enslaved that was just waiting to die and go to heaven
right.
their whole life.
Exactly.
Two different, you know, perceptions of what the Bible teaches.
I mean, because and you know you have a point there because there are only two religions that push the idea of captivity, capturing people and then forcing them to, in a way, in some cases, forcing them to accept it, and that's Islam and Christianity. They're religions of captivity. You're
uh-huh.
captured, and then you're given that religion to evolve up. So I agree. I think I agree with you a little bit there. But what about Islam? You think Islam is the same focus? Does it also have that devastating part to it?
Yes, yes. Anything that's forced on a group of people for the purpose of control, oppression, whatever the motive is problematic.
Right.
And it needs to be seriously examined. Because in African spirituality and all indigenous spiritual systems that I'm aware of have very similar concepts. And I'll just say two. One is the honoring and a relationship with the ancestors
mm-hmm.
in terms of accessing that and being connected with that spiritual realm.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is not forcing anything on people and understanding that we're spiritual beings having a human experience. So with or without a book or a theology or whatever, we're still spiritual beings, very capable of spiritual empowerment.
Right, right. There are a couple of African theologians of the modern era that have attempted to try to explain that whole Christianity role in a more positive light. Dr. Wyatt T. Walker, who was the pastor of a church in New York called Canaan Baptist. Dr. Walker wrote a book that, even though his specialty was religious music, his specialty was spiritual music, but he did talk about Africanizing Christianity. And he spoke of the fact of that as a process and as a possibility, and basically what he's doing, he's saying that the true principles of Christianity are African ideologies, the whole idea of love, compassion, giving, and some of those kinds of things are basically African in nature. So I've heard people argue that, so when Jesus, for instance, goes into Egypt and he becomes a part of the commission system and learns those principles and ideologies, and when he comes back and he begins to preach in his ministry, he's preaching from those ideologies and principles. Have you ever heard that?
The idea that Jesus was about love and...
Right, and that is the basis of it. And so as a result of that, Christianity is really an African influence.
Yes. Actually, there are great similarities with Christianity, some aspects of Christianity in terms of spiritual principles right. and Ifa.
Right, exactly. That's true.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Hold on the rest of them, yeah.
Because
the spiritual principles are universal. But
right.
Christians try to, you know, say that everything, not Christians, let me watch my language here, but Christianity teaches that everything came out of the Bible and the Bible is the only true, has the only true message, you know, and that is just not true.
Right. Exactly.
If you're going to teach something, teach what's true.
So do you think the black church, from what you've seen, and you've been a part of the black church system, which parts of the principles do the black church use? What are they using? Do you think that there is a general consensus among black churches to just focus on the loving and the compassion and the ideas of forgiveness and, you know, familyhood and wholesome life, you know, or do they become victim of some of those... other methods that have been used to capture and subdue and change the mind? How do you see that? You know,
both. Okay. Unfortunately, whatever, because we live in a European dominated culture, mm-hmm. society culture, whatever they say and what they do, very unfortunately, and to our great detriment, we copy and we mimic. Uh-huh. So there's a lot of conflicting, you know, writings in the Bible, and so that's what you're going to hear in the church.
Oh yeah,
so conflict and confusion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, on one hand, Jesus said talks about love and, you know, being a prince of peace, and someone said, I don't know, that scripture is not even, that writing is not in the Bible. I don't know, because I haven't researched that. On the other hand, you know, Jesus curses a fig tree and gets angry and takes a stick and, you know, beats people out of the temple. So you see conflicting, you know, messages.
Yeah, you do.
Where I see, you know, I just want to throw this in there, where I see is just a person, in a spirit in human form, this figure, because we don't know if Jesus actually existed. I'm going to throw that in there too. Just being his human self,
right,
as a spiritual being.
Okay.
Makes sense?
That makes a lot of sense. You know, yeah. And there's a lot of theologians that see that the same way you do. Matter of fact, Dr. Cain Hope Felder, who was the chair of the Divinity School at Howard University, wrote a book called Troubling Biblical Waters. And he addressed some of those conflicting stories and ideas in the Christian religion, even though he was a Christian minister, you know, and he said these are things that, you know, we have to not take in the black church and begin to embrace these more from there. And then there are obviously people that disagree with him altogether because they don't want you attacking any part of Christianity. They don't care what it is. But he did do that in his book, and his students that came to Howard Divinity School had to embrace, you know, a lot of those kinds of ideas. And he even went so far as to write a book called Stony the Road We Trod. And, you know, borrowing from the Black National Anthem, that book was about adapting a hermeneutical system and structure that is more African in nature, and hermeneutics is the whole concept of scriptural interpretation, and how to interpret the scriptures. And so ministers in seminary have to take a course in hermeneutics. And so what he was doing was writing a textbook to teach hermeneutics. And like I said, the name of it was Stony the Road We Trod. And what he said is that it's got to be based around our suffering and our understanding. So as we tell the story, and the Bible has some wonderful stories, wonderful symbolic stories that really focus in on our struggles. There are some powerful messages. I think more of them are in the Old Testament than they are in the New Testament. But the Old Testament, clearly, and then that even begins to be able to become a trouble. Because people began to argue over Old Testament, New Testament. There are many people believe that if you don't talk about the New Testament, then you're not really Christian. And so they struggle over. So a lot of times when you go somewhere and you hear them read the scripture, they'll read an Old Testament scripture and they'll read a New Testament scripture. And that is the idea to balance that both of them are important. Just like, you know, you have churches called New Testament. Where, you know, they want to just focus in on the life and the teachings of Jesus Christ and not on a lot of the stuff out of the Old Testament, because that's more related. So you're right about that, you know, but I think it's necessary for us to talk about it because this also, in some senses, become a source of division.
Absolutely.
Among our people in our community.
And yes.
Right.
And I want to say this, Dr. Rogers, you know, if you're a thinker and if you are, in fact, connected with your spiritual essence, especially as an African or an indigenous person, then you're going to have to question the content of the Bible.
Right.
And the Christian, you know, culture and thinking, you're going to have to, because a lot of stuff, just they're wonderful spiritual principles. Some stuff is just downright crazy, you know. Some stuff is questionable. And when you tell ignorant, and I don't mean that in a demeaning way, let's say the unknowing, people who are not well informed, people that are wounded and needy and vulnerable, when you tell them to take a book that's full of these conflicting messages and messages that are actually harmful to us, like slave obey your masters. When you tell people to take this stuff literally, and they do because they don't know any better, then you have, you know, then you have, let me say this, how can you expect people to develop spiritually?
Right.
What they wind up doing is fighting and starting new churches
and
all this other stuff instead of actual development and growth and unity and serving your community.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I want to just say to our listening audience, again, the reason that we are discussing this is because we are raising the question about the black church in terms of being able to resurrect the black family. And I use the black family before I even use the black community. I think it's the black family that has to be resurrected in a critical way and very soon. So is the church doing anything to resurrect the black family? And if it's not, is it then just doing anything to resurrect itself? You know, so what is the mission? That's what Dr. James Cone asked. What is the mission of the black church? Is it to save souls or to save his body? And what does saving souls mean? What do you mean by saving souls, you know? And so that those are the kind of questions. I want to, you want to add anything? Because I was going to go to our audience and see if there's any questions that are coming from that might our audience might have. But before I do, anything you want to add in there as well? Because I wanted to ask you about, in terms of, because you practice IFA in some can.
Yes.
Yeah, so how does IFA fit into this resurrecting soul families and resurrecting communities? Does it attempt to do that?
Now, I'm a student of IFA.
Okay, right.
So there's
okay.
a little difference because I'm in, you know, beginning stages of learning.
Okay.
But what I can say from 25 years of experience in the church and about 10 years of, you know, of learning slowly about IFA is that African spiritual systems, all of them, because there are many, you know, some don't even have a name, a major part of the spiritual system is keeping that family connection going from the unborn through the parents, grandparents, great, 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 to the ancestors.
Right.
That lineage is always connected and it's always important.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's broken in African spiritual systems, you must, there is a responsibility to heal what's broken in the family.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in my 25 years or more in the church, initially there was a level of, you know, working to keep the family together, black family together and community, but I've watched it devolve over the years to the point where, you know, how some scriptures can be, writings can be cherry-picked and people say, well, Jesus said, who is my mother? Who is my father? Who is my brother? And use that as an excuse to not talk to your sibling or your parents or whomever, family member for 10-plus years.
Right.
You know, I've witnessed it become a very divisive, be very divisive for families. I've witnessed that, and I've been a member of several ministries to the point where I had to get out. You're talking about movies. That movie, Get Out?
Oh, yeah.
I had to get out. The division itself was just insanity to me. I've watched families break down, including my own.
Right.
Because I'm saved, you're not, you're going to hell, so I cannot have a relationship with you.
Okay, that's right.
That is way too common in the black church now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you look at the scriptures and you read the biblical scriptures, particularly in the Old Testament, has a lot of passages that begin with family lineage, and it will go maybe sometimes 10 levels down, son of this and the son of that and the son of this, and they'll go all the way as they're describing a particular prophet. And I think that's very clearly focused on, you know, that ancestral hereditary thing that is so necessary in part of our development.
Unfortunately, that's not taught in church very often.
It's not done in church. It's definitely not. You're right about that. One of the critical parts, you know, to a lot of this is that the old black churches of the antebellum and post-antebellum were built by families. And so those traditions were able to stay within the family, and they used that as a means of tracking their ancestors and their lineages. I recall in several cases, even in my own family, a lot of my elders, who I would go into their houses, and if you looked at their Bibles, in the back of most Bibles is a family tree. And a lot of the elders that I knew would fill in those names and track that history. That's how I was able to learn about some of the elders in my case. You know, is that you were looking, they had ways of doing that. They were conscious of that. And very clearly the modern church now is not, that's not a part of their practice and their focus.
Yeah, and I want to say, you know, and a part of that, because the church did serve some wonderful, did do wonderful things, served a wonderful purpose.
Yeah.
As we lose our culture, as African people, we're losing those things that you're talking about, and that we're talking about, that connection to family, you know, and assisting the community and whatnot. We're losing it as we lose our culture.
Right. Exactly.
Because our ancestors that were enslaved, et cetera, they were closer to our culture. And the farther we get away from it, the more we lose it.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. And, you know, I say to our listening audience, I know sometimes we hear a lot about this, and we say, well, you know, the church ain't doing nothing. Why are we even talking about this? I don't want to tell you. We must recognize that spirituality is extremely important in African life, in the African soul. Spirituality. There is an African Holy Ghost inside of us. I heard Dr. Leonard Jeffries say that. See, sometimes we got to call on the African Holy Ghost and bring that out of us, because it does exist. It's so important that leadership must understand that, because even the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey recognized in his UNIA movement, as he was organizing his system and his forces, that he needed to start a black church. So he organized something called the African Orthodox Church. And look it up. Marcus Garvey did that, because he said, I know that my people must have a spirituality system that they can use and practice. So if you attempt to take it away, like a lot of times, as he said, we attack Christianity. And we are both agreed, like, there's a lot of reasons why we understand that. But you can't take that away. If you take Jesus from Big Mama, she won't make it.
That's right. That's right.
You can't take Jesus from Big Mama. And I know you can sit here and talk about all the problems that a Jesus concept have, but you can't take Jesus from Big Mama. You know, so, and we got to understand that in terms of leadership. That's a leadership issue that has to be looked at in terms of developing the market. Let me go up here to my dear brother out of the Bible bit, Brother Herbie White, all them black churches in North Carolina. Brother White, what you think about all this stuff, Christianity?
Oh, okay. Good evening, brothers and sisters.
Good evening. Good evening.
From my perspective, to take a person with African spirituality, and then somehow try to combine that with a European developed religion that was used by our oppressor, and try to combine those two together, is just going to confuse you.
Yes, it does.
It's just going to confuse you, because what Christianity stands for, just let's basic Christianity, the Ten Commandments and stuff. Europeans don't believe in any of that.
No, they sure don't practice it.
No, they evidently, if right. they don't practice it, then they don't believe it, but they use it as a tool. So I feel like that black people need to develop their own African spirituality that works for them. Now, what you said earlier about taking Jesus from Big Mama, See, Big Mama was a good person, right, in spite of Jesus.
Right.
She was just, in the church, there are a lot of good, decent people trying to do the right thing. But it's like trying to, if you don't have a hammer, you try to use a wrench to hammer something, it's not going to work very well.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so, we have to recognize that this religion wasn't created for us. It was created to be used against us. And we have to develop something that's going to work for us. And at the same time, not attack the others in our family that believe in that, just trying to do the right thing. But they're confused because their scriptures tell you if you don't do this way, you no good, and I can't do this with you, as the sister spoke on earlier.
Right.
And whatnot, to try to work with that. And then another problem is the counterfeit church. There's a lot of churches, black churches, that don't have nothing to do with nothing but a bunch of gossip and foolishness and skullduggery and all kinds of stuff.
Okay.
Because the people at the head of the church never believed in the church. It's just a way that they see to make money.
I agree. You see it all the time.
So you got a lot of churches that don't have nothing to do with saving people's souls or anything like that. And there's nothing that you can do to stop that. Anybody can go and go. Any con man or crook can go into a seminary and pass the course and then start up his own church, one of them Daddy Grace things and all that other kind of stuff.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And churches with ATMs in the lobby and things like that.
Okay.
So the church is not monolithic anyway. Mm-hmm. And one denomination don't trust the other denomination, and all of that, but a system of spirituality doesn't come from an organization. It doesn't come from a church. It comes from inside you and your recognition that you need to bond with a spirit that's much more powerful than you.
I agree. Now you talk.
And there's certain ways that you have to act. So if you look at the 42 principles of Mayat,
mm-hmm. Right.
If you got any kind of decency in your heart, you recognize that all these things are sound, very sound. They're very sound. They're basically telling you not to do anything to harm other people and to help other people.
Mm-hmm.
Under no circumstances.
And you're right. It's basically a simple system.
When you find something like that and whatnot, and then you just inculcate that into your everyday behavior, you don't have to go to a church. You don't ever have to go to any kind of church.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know, thank the brother for sharing, because he just pricked something in me. So I was in the Pentecostal Apostolic Church for many years, and one of the things that I see now, and for the past several decades, is that there's such a lack of accountability in the church. You can pretty much get away with anything.
Yeah.
You can say anything, and you can get away with anything. But when I was in my early 20s in the church, in the apostolic church, if you did something wrong, you'd have to go up in front of the whole church and confess and admit to what you did.
Yeah,
so it wasn't just
too.
Going someplace to one priest, and, you know, mm-hmm. the whole church, we had to stand up in front of all those black people and all those big mamas like you talked about, and you had to admit what you did. And so people were more likely to not do wrong things because they knew that there would be some level of accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just pretty much gone.
And you're right. So Brother White, what you're really talking about is that has to happen at the family level. The family
yeah.
level does that. It doesn't take that external building somewhere to do it. The family does that.
A lot of the churches now are businesses.
Yeah, real time.
And the bottom line in business is profit.
Right. And it's blatant. It's so blatant that it's. I don't say things are scary, but that's scary. The fact that it's so blatant, and our people are so blatantly being ripped off and pimped, and we just fall for it. We just suck it in. That's scary. Mm-hmm. But somebody like Creflo Dollar, and then all the white guys, half of them look like devils. They're getting in on a bandwagon, you know. They learn the pimping game. They're learning how to preach like black preachers. They're on BET late night, and they are conning and pimping people for all that they can get. That is scary that we are that gullible. So I do want to say the dialogue is critical. Teaching is critical about what spirituality actually is and how we can heal the black church, because it is. I mean, it's the largest spiritual, you know, institution that we have. That's where our people are. And we're in a time now where people are a little more open to learning, especially when they're seeing black men getting killed and Jesus ain't coming to save them. So there are different dynamics going on, so we can do some different things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, not to actually disagree with you, but you can't heal the black church. You can heal people in the church. But the church has a board of directors and bylaws and all this other kind of stuff, and it's governed by these laws and stuff like that. So the parishioners and what, they're not even concerned with how the people in the church feel. It's what their bylaws and their doctrine say, that this is the way this has to be. This is the way, you know. A couple of years ago, my cousin's wife had cancer. And she was, you know, in the hospital with radiation and chemo and all that other kind of stuff. And she was sick for a good while. And she was in Duke Hospital. And unfortunately, I wasn't there that day. But one of the women from my church came up there and told her that the reason that she was in the condition she was in is because she hadn't been tithing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 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 We do that nonsense, yeah.
I'm glad I wasn't there that day.
I know you are. let me ask Brother Marcus. Brother Marcus, is there any hope for the black church and the black community?
My brother, good evening. Good evening to your guests.
Good evening. How you doing?
You know me, you know, brother. You know me, you know.
I know.
I don't subscribe to no form of organized religion. Okay. All of them is a bunch of pimps. You know what I'm saying? That's my, you know, I mean, Christianity. You see, Christianity, it is an organizing tool for white folks, really, you know. It's an organizing tool. Just like Islam is an organizing tool for Arabs. But we get caught up in the mix because they use it to oppress us. And we have to remember, you know, the Bartholomew de las Casas that said, oh, let's go to Africa and Christianize, you know, use these Africans and Christianize them and civilize them and then come and enslave us here.
Right.
You know, so, I don't subscribe to, whenever I need a good laugh, I read the Bible. Whenever I need a good laugh, I read the Bible. I read the first book in the Bible, Genesis. I go to that book. Yeah. And when I read that book, and it tells me that, God created, you know, the heaven and earth. He created male and female. He created Adam, and then he put them in the Garden of Eden, right? Then he tell Adam, he say, okay, Adam, name all the animals. Adam went name all the animals. Then one day God walking in the garden and Adam was sad. He said, Adam, why are you sad? Adam said, well, God, you know, I need a woman for myself. So God, who is all-knowing, didn't he know that Adam would need a woman for himself? So evidently, Adam had to have more morals than God, because God wanted Adam to go cohabit with the animals. Yeah. Anyway, God made Eve for Adam, okay? Yeah. Adam cohabit with Eve, and they had two sons, Cain and Abel. So Cain killed Abel, all right? And, mm-hmm. and later on, Adam, he crawled off and died somewhere, leaving Cain and his mother. Now, you use the imagination to finish that story. It's all foolishness. It's a bunch of ignorance. And our people, we are not critical thinkers. That's why we get sucked into this thing. You know, it tells you were born in sin and shaped in iniquity. So in order for you to get into the kingdom of God, you have to accept some blonde-haired, blue-eyed man, you know, come on, man. You know, and this has been going on in the black community for too long. Now, granted, in when we were in chattel slavery, our people used it as a tool to liberate themselves. Mm-hmm. But now we are in a different time. See, we have knowledge has increased, and we have found out that all these things are allegory and mythology. Yeah, it's mythology. Not real.
That's right.
Okay? None of the characters in the Bible can you find a burial ground for them. Where is all these people in the Bible? Where is their burial ground? Where is David's burial ground? Where is Solomon's burial ground? There is no gravesite for these people. It's all foolishness. You see, and our people suck it up. That's why, you know, we can't move, because we are waiting for somebody to come from the sky. You know, and another contradiction. They tell you, okay, they say God is omnipresent. Okay, if God is omnipresent, then where the hell is he coming from? They say, oh, he's coming back. Jesus is coming back. How the hell can he be coming back and be here at the same time? It don't make sense. It don't make sense. So it's no matter what people confuse, you know, the Baptists can't get along with the Methodists can't get along. Look, I live in Memphis, right? Ain't no place saturated more than Memphis. Every corner is a church. It would be better if it was a factory. I like the program tonight. It's
great.
Very edifying. Continue.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much, brother. Thank you. Brother Griffin, can the black church resurrect the African American community?
Good evening, Dr. Rogers.
Good evening.
Are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Oh, yeah. Got a really good discussion. Look, I have no idea. I'm not anywhere near. I don't even possess the knowledge to be able to answer that question, but I can tell you this.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand after 50 years of life here on this earth that part of what I see among our people, number one, somebody said we use religion to liberate ourselves. Wish that we're in a transition from getting chattel removed from us, but there's been no liberation, else we wouldn't be where we are now. So when all of you start talking about how you're going to go from somebody coming back to his omnipresent is foolishness, part of the problem is the language that's used. See, you will never convert a mind by demonizing anything that it believes. If you show it respect and give logic and reason on why it may need to transform, there is a possibility it will do that. And I don't care what the subject is. I do know this from experience. Whether it's a child or full-grown man. So part of what we have as a people that is wrong is no respect for others unless they shake their head in agreement. You have to respect people even when you do not agree with them. I'm going to leave it there and hope that message gets across to some of the very intelligent callers that call in here but seem to miss that. Because if you think any single human mind has the answer to our liberation, you're part of the problem.
Okay.
I want to make a comment.
Please, wait.
Doc.
Yes, go right ahead.
hearing an echo. Does anybody else hear it?
I know that. I'm not sure what it is. I'll check it. But go right ahead.
Okay. Let the healers heal. Let the teachers teach. Let those that confront truth, you know, with anger, let them do that. We need everything that we can get to deal with our situation, because what everybody was saying so far is just right on point, you know. And what the brother was saying just now, it's taken me a while to understand what he was saying and to internalize it. And he's actually correct, because I, in my evolution from, you know, the Christian doctrine, especially Eurocentric Christian doctrine, and in my conversations with so many people, families are breaking up, as I said earlier, like crazy over Christianity. There are husbands, you know, that are leaving wives and et cetera, because one is waking up, you know, from the brainwashing of Eurocentric Christianity, and the other one is still addicted to it. You know, so when I say let the healers heal, you know, those of us that are healers, we do have to find a way to communicate regarding this issue, to at the very least have us be able to sit down and talk about it, rather than, as you talked about earlier, Doc, just kick each other to the curb.
Right.
Because marriages are breaking up. Siblings are not talking to each other.
Right.
Because of the Christian thing.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's exactly right.
Yeah. And the more people wake up, the more fighting is occurring in our communities.
Yeah, that's for sure. A lot of division.
Yeah, and we don't have to fight over the truth. We have to learn how to address that differently, because each one is passionate. You know, I'm passionate about the truth. They're passionate about being pacified. They don't want that pacifier taken out of their mouth,
right.
Understandably.
And see, that's why I agree with you so much, you know, in terms of the work that you're doing, in terms of trauma and fear, because a lot of that is trauma and fear.
Yes.
And people are fearful. You know, that's why I said in the book Beloved, the focus of the theology was to be happy, was to dance and sing, and don't let all of these things bother you. As in the problem with that by many is that you're trying to masquerade your pain,
mm-hmm.
And trying to suppress it instead of really bringing it out and deal with the causes. I mean, if you have a disease, you don't sing songs so you won't be sick from the disease. You try to cure the disease.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's what I would have seen wanting to see the Black church do, is kill the disease. Don't try to teach us how to smooth over it by singing songs and shouting and jumping up and down. Help me cure this disease. Let's fight it. Let's fight the disease wherever it is.
And that's where, again, dialogue comes in. We have to talk about this as a community.
Yeah,
I mean,
we do have
when
to
I talk. Hear people talk about sports, you know, because like I said, I'm not into sports. I'm not interested. It's redundant. I can't get into it. But you can hear conversations anywhere, especially here in North Carolina, about football, who the football players are,
hey.
Or shows or whatever, you know,
yeah.
That same type of level of dialogue that we have about silly things,
yeah.
We can start having about these serious issues, because
exactly.
This is very, very serious.
Yeah, very serious. This is serious.
I mean,
stuff.
You have people that are, you know, sold out Christians willing to do harm in the name of Jesus.
Yeah. And they do.
And then you have some that are very loving and sweet, and you wish there were more of those. But these are serious issues.
They'll blow you up in the name of Jesus.
Yeah.
Put a bullet in your head in the name of
Jesus. Yeah. I love the Lord. I'm gonna kill you because you know you're saying something against my Jesus. Why do you feel the need? And that's a question that I'm starting to ask. Why do you feel the need to defend a supreme energy?
Right. Exactly.
What do you get out of that?
Right.
The Bible teaches them to do that.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, it's in the Bible. So we really have to deal with this stuff. So it's a very good topic, Doc.
Right. Okay, area code 414-236. How do you see this caller? You have a question or comment?
Hi, Dr. Rogers. Dr. Belger, how are you?
Oh, good, good. How are you doing? You want to add to this, my sister?
I'm blessed as well. You have to forgive me, but I just tuned in, so I'm not sure how much I've listened to what's been said. But I think part of the challenge right now for, we're talking about Black churches,
right,
and how they view themselves, what I wanted to address is, you know, I've heard the term Eurocentric, and when you talk about the Eurocentric Christian patriarchal structural system that most Black churches operate under, but what we also have to remember is that they don't see it that way.
Okay.
They don't see it as them operating under a Eurocentric patriarchal structural system given to them by, you know, white patriarchy that was once over them.
Okay.
You understand?
I got you.
So it's hard to so first of all, they're not gonna be able to speak to your question, Dr. Rogers, was the mission of the Black churches is to resurrect the Black family or resurrect itself. It doesn't see itself as needing to be resurrected, because to resurrect something is to say it doesn't exist or it has died.
Okay.
And they don't see it that way.
Okay.
So the first step might be to say, look, can we just begin to have a conversation about, you know, Eurocentric, you know, Christianity or patriarchal system of structure, how it got to be that place, and look at how it has helped or not helped or harmed the Black family structure. Just start with that conversation.
Okay. All right. And see, the reason why, you know, we even bring this up is because when you go back and you look at the old Black church, the Black church of the antebellum, Black church of post-antebellum, that was a focus more on real liberation of getting out of this bondage system, giving people an example of how you can fight to get out of it, which is why the story of Moses was always used, and to look at how to fashion that in a way that people would begin to understand it, and then also getting people to want to help each other, seeing the need and the importance of helping each other. Doing that. So obviously, can we ever, so we raised the question about redemption, resurrection, rather, I'm sorry. So the question is, can we ever get back to that? Is that possible, or is that gone? Is that just going away with the times?
Well, I think we can get back to it. You mentioned the antebellum period of how the Black church took what that Eurocentrism type of religion that was given to them and made it their own and made it use it as a stepping stone to raise themselves as a people up. And that was carried through all the way through the civil rights. You know, we had the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and they used faith and religion and choice, all that to help. Martin Luther King came through that and others. So we had it up through that point. I think what we began to see, the silencing of the Black church as it speaks to this issue of the Black family and resurrecting it, is when we began to take money, funds within our, as a part of our mission. When we began to take federal funding and things like that, I began to see a type of silencing or quieting of the church when it came to speaking out against these types of issues. I don't know if anyone else has seen it, but I've looked at it for a while, and I've been in a Christian church and walked this faith for, aged myself a little bit, but over 40 years. So I agree with you, Dr. Rogers. I saw where it was, I saw where it is, and I saw when it began. When the silencing of the Black church to speak out towards these types of issues began, is when we began to take money, the federal funding for our mission.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Right, exactly right. Let me ask my sister, because this is a very good point. My sister from Fairland, from Maryland, from the state of Maryland, would you want to add some things to this conversation? Okay, so
oh,
yes, go right ahead.
Oh
you took me off mute. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I didn't realize it. Sorry. Hello, everyone. Now, this is a very important conversation. I'm glad that it's happening. You know, as someone who identifies as a believer in the Creator, a believer in Black Jesus, one of the things that I really, really want to see Black Christians do is stop using Christianity in whatever form we interpret it as a way to divide ourselves away from other members of the collective.
Right.
Whether it is someone with who is Muslim or someone who doesn't believe. Because I think that this time that we have on earth is hard enough. And we are all that we have. And we do not have the luxury of trying to subset ourselves off or cordon ourselves off from one another and thinking that that's going to result in our liberation.
Okay. I see that. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, and you're right. You could, I know you put a post on the thing about talking about all of the things after you die, where you're going to go, and using that as a means of instruction, because that's not going to help. That see, a lot of the principles, I think, that we have to understand, which is why it's troubling biblical waters, comes out of the some of the old religious ideas in the development of the Protestant church. Catholicism was actually the beginning of the European church. That was the birth of Christianity, was out of the Catholic church. And then the Protestantism movement came in and adapted the rules and regulations to fit whatever denomination they wanted to do. And so this whole thing about eschatology, which is the belief in the afterlife, has definitely been used to control. That is a controlling mechanism to instill fear, because fear, they believed, was a lot of ways of regulating people's lives. And you kind of have to coincide that with looking at the history of Europe, and you will see how they were in chaos. You know, Europe was in war all the time. They were fighting everybody all the time, every day. And so it was like chaos, completely chaos. You know, of these wars, and a lot of them were around religion. The church would burn you. They would cut your head off for things, and they were creating this fear system. So somebody came up with the concept, well, maybe when you die, then it's not going to be bad. So, and humans have always contemplated, what is it after you die? What's up there? What's left? What's out there? And so what better place to do that than the church? And that's what happened to church. Establish these principles and ideas, and so here we come, you know, transatlantic slave trade, coming into the Americas, and we pick up some of that same thing. Because IFA, what is the afterlife system in IFA, Sister Yan? What is that?
You go into the world of the ancestors,
uh-huh.
And you kneel at the feet of the divine,
right. Feet
just being not being literal. But you kneel with the divine, and you assist those that are still on this earth in whatever ways they need assistance, when that relationship is established.
Right.
And that's why I said, for indigenous people, every indigenous group, the red, black Indians that were here before we were brought here through the transatlantic slave trade, Filipinos, the indigenous Japanese, indigenous Hawaiians, all have ancestral connection as a typical part of this spiritual system.
You're breaking up, huh? Sister Yan. You're kind of breaking up a little bit.
Yeah, I said the indigenous, the Apache Indian, the Hawaiians, the indigenous Hawaiians, the indigenous Japanese, all have ancestral relationship as a critical
an
integral part of our spiritual system.
And they don't die. And that's the thing about those ideas.
But the ancestors' purpose is to assist us that are still here on earth and those that are coming. Among other things, so it's a cycle that continues of healing and assistance and love.
Right.
Not no burning in hell. That's just insanity. And let me say something really quickly too. Everybody's familiar with the Carlton Pearson story?
Which story?
Carlton Pearson.
I know who Carlton Pearson is, but I'm not quite sure. I don't think I've heard his story.
Well, he was a very up-and-coming pastor working with, I think, Oral Roberts, you know, bad mistake. But anyway, working with, he was under Oral Roberts, a black man, and Oral Roberts took him under his wing, and, you know, he got his, you know, doctorate, and, you know, he just became this major figure in Christianity. He had a huge church. He used to do these concerts, Azusa concerts, just full of charisma and brilliant, wonderful man. And so he had one of the, I think one of the first mega churches, and interracial mega churches. And so that was supposed to be a really big deal. Anyway, he had a revelation from the African Holy Spirit, and the revelation was that everybody was going to heaven. Nobody was going to burn in hell. That wasn't true. And so he told this thousands of member church this revelation and lost pretty much his whole church, lost everything, his church, his house, everything.
Okay.
And on top of that, much of Christendom threatened to kill him, wanted to harm him. He was called the heretic. They did whatever they did to, you know, label somebody as a heretic. I mean, they put this man through hell, you know. And so this is what happens when you, oftentimes when truth is revealed to many pastors, the truth is revealed to many pastors, but I've been told by several, they can't say it because they'll lose everything.
Yeah, that's true.
So there are lots of, and I said this before, there are lots of conscious clergy, white and black, but they have that fear because there's a violent energy, a violence that's taught in Christendom that came from Eurocentric Christendom. If you go against us, we're going to hurt you and destroy you.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. I didn't know. I didn't read that story. That's interesting.
Oh, powerful, powerful story. Yeah, it's on Netflix. Okay. Called Come Sunday.
Okay. Area code 414-324.
Oh, what we had the other day? Cool. Get the pillow. Here.
Hello, how are you doing? Area code 414-324. Okay, I guess he just wants to listen. All right, no problem.
Hey, Doc. Hey, Doc.
Oh, okay, good. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Doc, I followed that off. I'm a grandson for a moment there. How you doing today?
Oh, hey, wonderful, man. How you been?
Peace. Good. Is that Oshie?
Yes.
Is that Oshie?
Peace, Oshie.
How is everyone?
Great.
All right.
Doing great.
Good. Well, this topic is very interesting. And
Thank you.
I was just talking about this the other day. And I guess since I'm a staunch Pan-Africanist, independent, liberationist, sovereigntist, this subject is very deep because it's the crux of the problem that we really have as African people, not just in this country, but globally.
Right.
Yes.
European Christianity, the way that it has been imposed, the way it's practiced, whether it be Methodist, whatever, Catholicism, whatever, not a good system for African people. It's not a system for liberation for African people. It's an exploitive, individualistic system, and it's not for African people. It purports itself to be historic. When it is not, there is no history of it. So, to me, you know, in the Haitian Revolution, Ludi Bookman, who was from Jamaica, spiritualist, he told those brothers and sisters, he said, if you throw away the white man's God, you will be free. If you throw away the white man's God, you will. He didn't say you might be free. He didn't say you could be free. He didn't say maybe you'll be free. You know, no. He said if you throw it away, you will be free. Our problem is that we can't throw it away. Right. You know, it has been so embedded in us and our belief in it that it is the number one hindrance for African unity globally, locally, or whatever, is theology. Theologies that have been imposed upon us, Islam as well, all those other black Hebrew Israelites. Malcolm said it best. So when I come to the table to discuss the issues that are affecting our people as African people, I'm not coming with the fact that I'm a Muslim and I believe in El Islam, because I know I'll get an argument from those who believe in other faiths.
Right.
I'm coming there with the sole purpose of working with us to correct all the issues that are affecting us as African people and for us to stand independently, for us to stand on our own and do for ourselves. But I know if I come there, I got to keep it in the closet, keep it in my back pocket. But those two proselytizing religions, above all, have been, they're all a hindrance. In fact, Dr. John Henry Clark said it best. They ain't nothing but male chauvinistic murder cult. Male chauvinistic
right.
murder cult.
That's right. You're right, and that's true.
And you can't find on the planet anybody who has been more evil and violent than Europeans, you know?
It's true.
Mm-hmm. In their history, their whole history evolved through violence. And so for us to think that a theology that they have imposed upon us will liberate us is ludicrous. It's fantasy. And in fact, the whole thing is fantasy.
Brother Oshie, do you
not saying there's some good moral story in it that we can take and utilize for the betterment of our personal selves and hopefully for the betterment of as a whole. But in reality, really, y'all, kick it to the curb.
Right, right.
You know, really, kick it to the curb. But just like Brother Marcus said, you know, if I want to get a good laugh or be entertained, you know, I'll pick the Bible up, you know. Right. And that's not, let me just say this. It's not to be demeaning to those, but just like this, like Big Mama and so forth. But damn it, the reality is this. We're at a stage right now globally, we're in a very tenuous position on the continent and everywhere else. Here we are, have a continent with all the resources, all the riches that everybody wants, can't think they can't do without, and they damn it don't want to pay for it. And yet we're talking about we are poor people. We're not. And Africa is not poor, it's being looted.
Right.
And we should be in control of it. But yet the Chinese, I just saw a piece, a lot of times I see stuff on the internet, I don't know whether to believe it or not, but I just saw a piece where the Chinese have buried tons of waste, radioactive waste, in the Sudan, and it's definitely possible considering what the Chinese are doing on the continent.
Right, what they're doing on the globe.
On the globe, yeah, <Right. laughs> on the globe. But one thing about the Chinese, as opposed to the United States or the Western countries, the Caucasians, they just peddling arms and violence. They ain't building nothing. But they did build something in the colonial times that they tore up
right.
when they had to give them up.
Brother Oshie, do you think there's a spiritual system?
Building roads.
Do you think
sorry,
there's a, do you think there's a spiritual system that can be helpful for the black community? Is it because, you know, everybody has some kind of a spiritual ideology, system, thought. Is there one that can you think that can help and support the building?
You know, let me just say this, because they're so varied, everybody has their own personal beliefs, My contention is at this moment, we have one allegiance, and that is to one Africa in unity and in our ability to do for ourselves and control our resources, to stable our families. So that's the only thing I'm putting any kind of allegiance in. I don't think there's any other theologies that are out there that, you know, that are not perpetuating an individual. I got mine. I'm saved. How you doing? Well, I'm blessed and highly favored. Oh, your ass is blessed and highly favored, but our community is going to hell. Your family is going to hell, but you're blessed and you highly favored. You got Jesus.
Right.
In fact, your whole wish is that the rapture was right today, so you could be raptured up and the tribulation and apocalypse will happen to all those non-believers and they can go to hell.
Right.
That's what you believe.
Brother Griffin, Brother Griffin, oh, she wants to ask you a question. Brother Griffin?
Yeah, Brother Oshie, I wanted to ask this, and I want to frame it in a very general term. I've heard exactly what he said, and I've listened to this for years. And here's what I want to know. When you say Africa's not poor, we're rich because of resources, let's get this clear. This global system is set up where those who choose to exchange and have commerce with each other do it. And they have control of the, quote, dominant banking system. So I want you to explain how anybody in Africa is going to put their resources into the pipeline unless you come up with an alternative to what's going on. And I say that with the same comment I made before. This isn't a matter about demonizing somebody. It's about explaining how you're going to put your concept into work, knowing what the present system is.
Understanding what the present system is, which is European, Caucasian, extremism, racism, and privilege. It dominates the globe. I have no illusions. I ain't tripping. What, to me, counters that is Africans throwing off the yoke, releasing the vice grip that these Europeans have on our minds, and the fact that there is something outside of them. We don't have to go by their system. We don't have to do what they do. We don't have to beg and plead and hope and pray and wish. We can do for ourselves. We can kick out all the despots, kick out all those Negroes on the continent and everywhere else, and have men and women of integrity, men and women who have a purpose and understanding what it means to be African and want to be such, and understand what we have the potential to do, and wanting more so than anything to help to realize it by actually doing work, not just discussion.
What does that mean? What does that mean, sir, actually doing work?
What that means is developing plans and outlines and directions for groups of our people to show examples. Let's say, for instance, there's a group of our people who are going to do building roads. They have found the individuals to teach them. They gathered the wherewithal to get the equipment and so forth, and they began to help connect communities.
Brother Oshie, can I ask you another question?
Please do.
I've been around, I've been trying to understand this. You said they're gathering equipment doing roads. Do they own the manufacturing to have the repair parts they need to keep this equipment going? Or are they just buying something and starting a project? See, I asked you a very simple question.
Let me finish, sir.
To try to get you to build on the whole thing. I believe what you say is possible. What I don't believe is that people understand what it takes to do what you say. It takes extreme commitment and dedication to be able to build, and you cannot, what I have not seen is the same thing I started with. have not seen enough black people, I don't care where they come from on the planet, that are willing to understand it has to be a collective to get this done. No single mind can do it. No group of quote, think tank four or five people can do it from the top down. It has to be a collective. And that's the biggest problem I see. Most people that, quote, want to liberate their people, all they want to do is replace the damn foot that's in the boot on our throat. So I'm going to shut up.
I don't know where you're coming from on that, because I'm espousing, obviously, it's idealistic, of course, because I'm espousing true Pan-Africanism. I'm espousing African people waking up, releasing the vice grip that the European, the Caucasian, have on our minds, releasing that vice grip and seeing the Caucasian for who and what they are, not challenging them. There's nothing we can do about them. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe who and what they are and what they've done. So we ain't talking about them, but we are talking about us. We're talking about having the courage to be ourselves, the courage to be African, the courage to you know, from a spiritual standpoint, be that. From a religious standpoint, no way. Because it's not imposing anything on anybody. It's just the belief that we are one, and we are going to do this for the future of our people and our children, in the honor of our ancestors and those who died.
Okay.
Do we continue? Is our whole thing in life to continue to live under the yoke of Europeans, the way they treat us? Look at the history of all our studies. History is best qualified to reward our research. Damn it! Look at the history.
Okay.
It's time for us, like that movie, Get Out. It's time for us to get, Sister Bonifua said it, and she's right, it's time to get out. But there's very few of us who have the kind of mindset that, as his brother's book, Psyche, Sovereign Psyche. What he's saying is we're in a situation where we can't think sovereignly.
Right.
We're in this environment, but we can't think independently.
Brother Ocean, let me go over here to this. I have a caller here from Montgomery, Alabama, 334-676.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening, Dr. Rogers. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you, sir.
Good evening to you, Sister Ian. It's a pleasure talking with you and the others who are on the phone call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been listening, and I wanted to throw in a couple of cents as it pertains to the kinds and types of dynamics that the black family is experiencing.
Right.
Most particularly, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender ideologies, these isms such as nihilism, which are not only defining or redefining the black family, but redefining individuals. And so I'd like to get your guests to comment on how this is taking a part in getting us away from African spirituality, and is there such a thing as redirecting things back into a social order or a cosmic order the way it's supposed to be? You know, when black families aren't able to talk very openly about sexual and gender preferences, as well as with incest, for example. And so how can this be corrected in order for us to once again get back in the state of things?
Very good question. Excellent question. Sister Yan, you want to make a comment real quickly before I do?
You can go ahead and I'll comment later.
Okay, all right. Number one, I think your question strikes at the heart of the whole struggle and its origin of African people, and what is it that we needed to have carried forth as we moved. I think somewhere in there it got lost that we had arrived, and that we were free, that we were left alone, and that everything is going to be all right. So I mean, if you even listen to the songs. You hear that. You know, everything's going to be all right. And those are ideas that obviously you need to soothe, you know, some of the things that, you know, we have gone through, our families are going through. But I think the problem is that we have been so traumatized by the system, and we never had a chance to heal from that. We still haven't to this day. So we allow then at this point all of these other isms and ideologies to come into play, again, trying, I think, to heal our pain. And it's not going to happen like that until we dissect why we have the pain. It's kind of like medicine, you know, like I said, like a doctor, hospital. You got an issue, a medical issue. You have to dissect why you have that issue. If you can't do that before you begin prescribing medication, you got to deal with what is it that you got. Because you might prescribe the wrong medication. And that's what has happened to us in the past, that we've been prescribing the wrong medication. And it hasn't helped. And we continue to keep doing it. And it's still not helping. So somewhere, our people, and we've had ancestors that have tried to do that. The Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey very clearly had some real serious blueprint plans that if we would have continued to develop, he didn't have all of the answers, but he had enough for us to work with. But they got caught up into this schism, and all these things began to pop up, and some of the most ingenious minds on the planet were living at that time at each other, and they could not pull together enough of an ideology that would combat some of this. And so that's one of the reasons that the church was able to get in so easily, because you had nothing else. Nobody had come up with anything else to work. They were trying to say education. Yeah, but what education? White education? European education? That wasn't going to work. Integration?
I think of Herbert Harrison, who was considered the Black Socrates.
Yes, yes.
Who was an atheist agnostic, or agnostic atheist, which is a very interesting combination.
Right.
And so with his ideologies of free thinking, could that be a hindrance or a help of sorts to be able to reorient things?
And I think it could. I have read some of Herbert Harrison's ideas and analogy, and I think. But see, what when you have those, you have to be able to take that and create an agenda, and that agenda has to be embracing. It has to deal with male, female, children, young people. It must consider some of the differences that. Could be. You have to understand the trials that people, everybody's not alike, you know. I mean, so I very clearly, yes, that could have happened. Marcus Mosiah Garvey's platform and his ideology, that could work. That could have worked. And what he was trying to do, he was trying to create a holistic African community where you had everything that's being controlled by the very same people that were going through the system. So but somehow or the other, we couldn't see that, and we fought each other. We fought him. We fought the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. We fought Noble Drew Ali. We fought these folks because of the fact that, you know, we didn't understand, and it obviously wasn't clear to us. So I agree with you, and I think that's what we are getting now. That's why this kind of discussion is so necessary, because there's a confusion. It's a complete confusion.
Thank you so very much for taking my call. I'm a first-time caller. I've been listening to you for a while now.
Thank you.
So I finally decided to call in. Thank you so very much.
I'm so happy. Okay. Please stay with us, too. Thank you.
Yes. Doc, I'd like to get something in before we end.
Okay, yes, go right ahead. Uh-huh.
Okay, so I said earlier, let the healers heal, let the teachers teach, let the builders build. We all have a place here.
Okay.
You know, whether you're Christian, Muslim, or whatever, we have one struggle, and that is a struggle for our liberation. So a couple of things. 1804, the documentary, whoever hasn't seen that,
That's very clearly shows how the Haitians fought and won the revolution through using African spiritual system.
Right.
That is how they won. We are, the white supremacy has, or pathology has done a job on our minds because we can't see what's in front of our eyes.
Right.
You know, our African culture has so much power in it. But one of the things Europeans did was make everything African wrong and terrible and horrible. And you have the majority of us still not wanting to be African. And I'm a firm believer that in terms of what I was talking about with the ancestors, ancestral connection and whatnot, until we embrace who we are as Africans, we're going to suffer. Every other group that is successful is nationalistic.
Right.
It worked for their own people.
Yes.
But we're being pulled in so many different directions, so that takes us back looking at ourselves.
That
healing piece is critical.
Right.
We are complicit in being pulled in these different directions.
Oh, Sister Ayana, I hate to cut you off. It's 10:01. This is part one of this discussion, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to do part two. We were due to have a minister to come on. He chose not to come on, so something must have happened. Hopefully that he will be able to do so on next week. But we thank all of you. We are at the end. This is a very dynamic discussion. All of your inputs have been fabulous. So we want to continue this. We will talk next week. And we'll be here back at the Black Reality Think Tank. Have a good evening, good week, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
Black is you, black is me, black is us, black is
you.
Black is me, black is me, black is us, black is free. Black is us, black is me, black is us, black is free. Black is free, black is me, black is us, black is free. Black is you, black is me, black is us, black is free. Black is me, black is me, black is us, black is free. Black is us, black is me, black is us, black is free. Black is free. Black is you, black is me, black is us, black is free. Black is me, black is me, black is us, black is free. Black is us, black is me, black is us, black is free. Black is free, black is me, black is us, black is free. Black is you, black is me, black is us, black is free. Black is me, black is me, black is us, black is free. Black is us.